Thank you. I'd like to introduce you to my band. This is Dave. Dave, this is Teresa. This is Jackie. That's Roy over there. And Nikki from the Dawson. That we could be here all night. Let's recap. Nogales. We're in Nogales, Arizona, and we're trying to get to Vancouver. So we got a lot of ground to cover. I try doing the sign thing again, and I don't get picked up, and I decide just I'm going to take the bus. And I'm going to take the bus from Nogales to Phoenix. And we're waiting to get on the bus. And everybody on the bus looks like they're getting on the bus from Nogales to Phoenix. They just kind of have that kind of Nogales to Phoenix look about them. Except for this one guy who is looking a little different than everybody else. And what I noticed most about him is his suitcase. He's got this big wonkin' steel thing, and it's about this big, and it looks like it's from James Bond or something. And he's telling these guys, be careful with that thing, be careful with that thing. And he's kind of this nerdy, skinny, weirdo guy who happens to sit next to me in the bus. And about halfway out of Nogales, we are pulled over by the police, the Border Patrol. And I'm afraid because, like I told you, I went down to Mexico, but they never did anything at Nogales, and according to my passport, I'm still in Mexico. I think, oh, this is trouble now. But they're not looking for white guys like me. They're looking for other folks, and everybody has to see their papers. And, of course, they pull off a Mexican man, a woman, and a small child, and they're taken off the bus. And everybody's really quiet, and the bus starts out again, and the guy beside me says they should arm the border like they do in Guatemala. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, all this bullshit about illegal aliens, why don't they just arm the border like they do in Guatemala? I mean, in Guatemala, the Mexican border in Guatemala, if a Guatemalan comes to Mexico illegally, they just pick them off at the border with their guns. I said, well, hi, who are you? And he starts talking about, I said, you just been down to Mexico? And he says, well, actually, I'm coming from a little further south. I'm coming from Colombia. I said, oh, what do you do down there? He said, well, I'm kind of working for the government. I said, oh, what part of the government? He goes, the DEA. I said, oh, I mean, I don't know what that means. And I said, that's the, the DEA, really? And yes, yeah, so that's the Drug Enforcement Agency. And I said, well, what are you doing down there? And he said, well, you know those satellites? I said, yeah, like the ones up in the sky. And he says, yeah, well, those things, you know, they're like a big, and he drew me this pie graph. He said, pretend this is a satellite. He said, see these parts in here? Those are all legal. But there's a spot, it's like a big pie, and there's a spot on the satellite where you can pirate the satellite to use for your own communication. I said, well, why would you want to do that in Colombia? And he explained to me who uses those satellites and the towns he went into that smelled of ether from the cocaine extraction. And he's an interesting fella. And we get into Phoenix, Arizona. And Phoenix is like the Phoenix bus station is like a theme park. It's got little cactuses and adobe walls and stuff. And I meet the guy who's fixing the photo machine at the bus depot. And he has to go to all these photo booths and take pictures of himself to make sure these things are working. This is true. And then he sends them back to the company and writes on them and dates them and stuff and changes all the chemicals. And so somewhere in, like, I don't know, Nebraska or something, there's thousands of pictures of this guy sitting in photo booths throughout Arizona. And we go down to downtown Phoenix. There's something weird about downtown Phoenix, and there's something eerie in the air, and we get to Phoenix and there's a bus stop, and we have to wait for a couple hours before the next bus, and I decide to walk around, and there's nobody in downtown Phoenix. There's just nobody there. It's like walking through a Twilight Zone thing, and I go to a restaurant, And there's nobody in the restaurant except the guy behind the counter. I said, where is everybody? And he says, there's nobody down here. It's downtown. I said, what do you mean? Nobody lives down here. They all just work here. You see all those buildings? Those are all full of people. But at 4:30, it's empty, and the hall of downtown Phoenix is empty. And they live out, the people live out between downtown, and then they live in the suburbs, and then the malls where they go shopping is further out than that. So nobody in Phoenix actually lives in downtown Phoenix. And so we get on the bus from Phoenix to LA, and the bus driver is the biggest man I have ever seen in my entire life. He's a small planet, and he has these little moons orbiting around him, and everybody has to sit at the back of the bus because he's so big. And I think maybe that something's gone wrong here, and that actually he's a biker, and that he's going to hijack this bus to go to Los Angeles and get his girlfriend out of jail. And but it's not long before I realize why he is as big as he is, because an hour out of the station, he stops and says, "Bit stop, everybody. Be back in the bus in 10 minutes." And, 20 minutes later, he's on his second piece of pie. And eventually, the bus breaks down. And I think I know why it breaks down. It's all that weight at the front of the bus pushing on the engine. And this guy's totally, he's incompetent, of course. And he says, "Well, I'll make a couple of calls. We might be here for a while. Better go in and get a bite to eat." So we're a little late coming into the LA depot, and we arrive in the Los Angeles bus depot about 3:30 in the morning. I don't know if any of you have been in the Los Angeles bus depot before, but they actually once you get in the depot, you're not allowed into the bus depot unless you have a ticket, a valid ticket, or you've coming off a bus. They don't have to. Then it's basically, it's guarded. They have armed guards at the entrances, and you can't get in or out of the Los Angeles bus depot. And I'm staying with some friends of Chuck in Los Angeles, but I'm not going to wake them up at 3:30 in the morning. And I'm really, really tired from this trip. And I decide that I'm going to sleep. And there's nowhere to sleep because they make the benches uncomfortable so that people can't sleep in them at a stretch. And so I go around the corner, and there's a bunch of guys sleeping around the corner. I think, wow, this must be the place. I recognize one of the guys from Nogales. And he looks at me and says, "Donde es hombre, aren't you?" So I am sleeping on the floor of the Los Angeles bus depot. And this guy is, they're cleaning. They clean at night. And there's a big guy with a buffer, and he's kicking me. He goes, "Wake up, wake up." And I kind of open my eyes, and he says, "Wake up and smell the bus depot." And I say, "No, thank you." And I decide the only place I can actually sleep where he's actually cleaned already is a little slot by a door where the buses come in, and people wait in line at this door in the morning. But I check the schedule. The next bus isn't there till a few hours away, so I curl up and go to sleep. And of course, in Los Angeles, they're all sorts of folks, and they've got the lights on all the time in the Los Angeles bus depot. So I just decide to, put my toque on, and so I put my toque on over my head, break out the light, and I wake up in the morning, and I wake up and I roll my toque up over my head, and there's a small boy standing about 5 feet away from me, and he's a small black kid, and he's with his mom and his older sister. He's about 5 years old, and he's dressed very well, and they're waiting in line for the bus, and our eyes meet, and he is completely and utterly terrified of me. And his mother is holding him back, and she doesn't want anything to do with this. And I'm trying to, I was thinking about maybe telling him why I looked like that. And it's kind of a long story, as you know. And I decide I can't tell him why I look like such a bum, you know, and I feel like saying, I don't say anything to him, but I'm trying to think what would I say, and I would say, now I think I would tell him, listen, son, I'm not really a bum. I'm a Canadian. That crossed my mind, and I'm. This is the second week of March, 1991, and I'm staying with the people I stayed with on the way down. People I didn't know, Porter and Ingram. People who my friend Chuck met in Dawson City, and he was supposed to come down and meet us there, and he didn't show up. And they're expecting him, and he never shows up. And so I go over and stay at their place, and there's a bit of, I call him on the phone, and there's a bit of tension in the air, and I'm not too sure what that tension is from, but it's not long after I get there that I realize what the tension is all about, because they have a really big TV, like a lot of people in Los Angeles, and it's and there's a news channel, and this is the second week of February 1991, and in the first week of February, March, the first week of March 1991, a very terrible, terrible thing happened in Los Angeles, and on February 4th, they broadcasted on the TV, and it was the beating of Rodney King, and which sparked the LA riots and all that shit. And so there was a lot of racial tension in the air, and I decided I was gonna get out of there as soon as I could, and I took the next red eye to San Francisco, and I arrive in San Francisco, and I'm really, really not have got a lot of money. And I arrive at San Francisco at 7 in the morning, and my next bus leaves at 8 that night. And so I decide to wander around San Francisco. And San Francisco is a great town, and it's great to be back here, but I don't have any money. And I just walk. I spend the whole day just walking around. I go to Nob Hill and Fisherman's Wharf and down to Golden Gate Park and all over the place and Chinatown, and I'm, like, really, really hungry. And I've only got enough money for a drink. So And I'm really hungry. So by the time I get to the bar, I make a mecca, and I'm going to the Vesuvio. Vesuvio is a very famous bar in San Francisco. It's right across the street from City Lights Books. The Vesuvio is a mecca for beatnik wannabes like myself, because Jack Kerouac himself used to drink at this bar. And in the alleyway between City Lights and Vesuvio, there's an alleyway, and it's been renamed Jack Kerouac Alley, and there's a big mural of Jack Kerouac on the alley, and they've got a drink named after Jack Kerouac at the Vesuvio Bar. And I think, what would Jack think about this? Allen Ginsberg called Jack Kerouac the new Buddha of American prose. Jack Kerouac said, I'd rather be thin than famous. Jack Kerouac died fat from fame and booze. And so I raise a glass to Jack Kerouac. I remember something he once said. Jack Kerouac said, "Ah, fuck, man, I'm tired of trying to figure out what to say. It doesn't matter anyway. I only know one thing. Everybody in the world is an angel." Must be about time to get that bus. I pick up my bag at the bus depot, and I'm not taking an ordinary bus this time. I'm taking the Green Tortoise. Yeah, the Green Tortoise is a bus which is run by hippies. It's based out of San Francisco. They do tours all over the place, down to Mexico, up to Alaska, and tonight's reading is brought to you by Green Tortoise Tours, and they're based out of San Francisco, and they have a bus run that goes from San Francisco to LA twice a week, and it's cheap. It's the cheapest way to travel by bus, and it's comfortable, because in the bus, it's not an ordinary bus, and it's convertible, and weird things happen to it. And I'm waiting in line to get into the Green Tortoise, And there's this really, there's a couple, and they're kissing at the at just before they're getting onto the bus. And I think to myself, fuck, I'm lonely. And it's this girl and this guy making out, and she gets on the bus, and he leaves. And on the Green Tortoise, they have tables that you can sit at that later fold down into beds. So I'm sitting at this table, and the woman sits down at my table. This woman that was kissing her boyfriend outside, and we start talking, and she's 21 years old. She's from San Francisco. Her name's Ruth, and she's wearing braces. And just as we're pulling out of the depot, that guy hits the on stereo thing, and they're playing Patti Smith. And I'm in heaven. I'm just like, Patti Smith, San Francisco, and a 21-year-old San Francisco girl with braces on the Green Tortoise. This is great. I've died and gone to heaven. And so she said, what have you been up to? And I proceed to tell her basically what I've told you tonight. And then later on in the at night, they flip these tables and the chairs so that everybody in the bus gets to sleep horizontally. And I know that's hard to believe, but it's true. And there's a part where you can crawl underneath the table and have complete... come on in. ¿Dónde es hombre, Rania? It's getting warm in here. So I know this because I've taken the bus before, and I crawl underneath the table, and I'm there, and I've got this place all to myself. I think this is great. I'll be able to sleep all to myself. And there's a blanket that comes down from the people that are sleeping above me, so I've actually got a curtain on this thing. And I hear a little, this girl pops her head in. Ruth pops her head in and says, can I come in? There's no room upstairs. And I said, no, vamonos. No, that's not what I said. I said, yowza. I said, whoa. So she comes in and we start talking, and she said, must be, she said, how are you feeling? I said, well, you know, I'm wrecked. I mean, I'm just wrecked from this fucking trip. And she said, well, let me rub your back. and she starts rubbing my back. And then I start rubbing her back. And the next thing you know, I'm having sex on a bus. Not good sex. But how bad can it be? It's a 21-year-old San Francisco girl with the braces on her teeth named Ruth, and the Beach Boys are playing on the sound system. I wish they all could be California. I think I've died and gone to heaven. And the next stop on the trip is Cow Creek, which is in Oregon. And in Cow Creek, the guys from the Green Tortoise have a little spot where everybody... They have a little spot in the woods, and they have a sauna, and they have this big feast, and everybody cooks stuff, and they have a little creek that runs by right near the sauna. So that what happens is that you go in the sauna with a bunch of... Everybody takes off their clothes, and you jump in the sauna with a bunch of strange naked people. It seats about 24 people, and a lot of weird tattoos and body piercings and things. And it's great because you get to see all your fellow passengers naked. I don't know whether you've ever been on a bus before, but that's for like 6 hours. wonder what that guy had looked like without any clothes on. And then they have this, just outside the sauna, they have the Cow Creek, which is a little stream that goes by. And it's really, really cold. And after you're all sweaty and stuff from the sauna, you run into the creek. And it's great because all the guys' dicks shrivel up to this big, and all the women's nipples go swinging. And I'm thinking, wow. So I say, Ruth, you want to go for a sauna? And she says, no. And I say, why not? She says, well, I don't know, I'd be kind of embarrassed. This is a woman who has just had a sex with a stranger on a bus. So anyway, so I go to the sauna alone and... Thanks, Dave. And we don't talk a lot after that. And the next stop is San Francisco. And we get into San Francisco late, and as I said, I'm running out of money, and I'm very, very worried because I don't know if I'm going to be able to get back to Vancouver in time and or with enough money, and I don't know whether the buses are running, and so the Green Tortoise pulls up to San Francisco. Seattle, thank you. Oh, you were there. Thank you. Just checking. I'll have another drink. Nora will have another drink, too. What time is this place closed? I'll reach you some fucking bowl. Let me tell ya. So we get into Seattle, and I, to this day, I'm regretting not giving Ruth my copy of On the Road. And she's there to meet her brother, and she's moving to Seattle, and her brother's there, and a lot of his friends are there too. I think they're kind of anxious to meet Ruth, and they're like, "Hi," and off she goes, and I have to get the next bus from Seattle to Vancouver, and I don't know how late it's going to be, and I just make the bus that's going to go from Seattle to Vancouver, and I get on the bus, and there's a guy that's sitting there from the Green Tortoise trip, and he's gonna. So I ask him if I can. I say, I saw you on the Green Tortoise trip, and I ask him if I can sit down. And sure enough, you know, I didn't even. I mean, I knew he was a wacko. Even, I mean, this is me sitting with a wacko on purpose. And I said, well, what are you doing? And he was the road manager for Skinny Puppy. I don't know if any of you guys know about Skinny Puppy. A very odd Vancouver band. And I turned to the guy and I said, they're pretty weird. And he says, you think they're weird? You gotta see their fans. And he tells me all these wacky stories about Skinny Puppy groupies. And there's another wacko on the bus, and she wants to get into Canada, but she's pissed out of her head. And she doesn't have any money. And they're at the border crossing, and I think they turn her back because she doesn't have enough funds. And I think, fuck, I don't have any money. How am I going to cross the border? It's not a problem. They let me through. And I get to Vancouver, and I have money in my bank machine. It is now Saturday night. It's past midnight, so it's Sunday morning. It's March the 17th. It's St. Patrick's Day. I'm going to get some money out of my bank machine. I'm going to find Chuck, and we're going to have this great, great St. Patrick's Day celebration. So I go to my bank machine, and I don't know whether this was years ago, or did anybody else have a bank machine that, a bank card that didn't work on Sundays? So I had like this religious bank card, and it would work every other day of the week but Sunday, and I was trying to get there before midnight because I knew this, and I was not able to take out any money, and I have about $7 left in my pocket. And it's just after midnight, and I think, I'll go see Chuck. I'll go find him, and I go down Granville Street, and I find his sleazy little hotel, and I go up the stairs, and there's a guy, of course, at the desk, and he says, what do you want? I said, is Charles Shepard in? He goes, yeah, he's here. And I go, oh, thank God, because he owes me a lot of money, and he'll save my butt. And if all else fails, you know, we'll do what, we're not allowed to sleep in the hotel, but we'll do what we did last time when we went to the Post concert, which is crawl up the back alley fire escape and crawl into his window. And he goes, but he's drunk. And I think, well, fuck, it's St. Patrick's Day and it's Chuck. Of course he's drunk. I said, great. So I'm assuming that means that he has some liquor on him. And the guy said, and I said, great, well, just, you know, let me in. And he said, no, I won't do that. He's passed out. I said, well, just wake him up. He said, I'm not waking him up. You know what he's like. So he had a point there. And so I said, well, how early can I come back here to see him? He said, 8 o'clock the next morning. So I phone a couple of people and nobody's home. And I decide the only thing I'm going to be able to do is to go to an all-night restaurant and stay there all night. So I go to the Denny's just around the corner from the art gallery. And I'm in line, and it's like, by this time it's about 2 in the morning and the bars are starting to let out. And there's all these rich fucking North Van kids waiting to get tables after having a good time in I don't know, Richards on Richards or something. And I'm in lineup and I'm waiting to get my table and I think, I can't do this. I just cannot do this. So I leave and I go back down to Granville Street and I phone up Jonathan. You know Jonathan. That's just psych! Ah! And Jonathan's up. He's playing the dictionary game. I have exciting friends. And he's like, you can get the last bus here right away. So anyway, I go in and he said, how was your trip? And I can't really, I just want to sleep. And the next morning, I'm walking down Granville to go see Chuck. And there he is. He's walking away from me. I can see him. And I do my standard yell at Chuck when I haven't seen him for a while thing, which is, hey, look at the little white boy. And he looks over and he's like, hey, man, how you doing? He says, come on up to the room. And he's out of booze by this time. But he says, how was your trip? So I basically tell him the story that I've told you tonight. He says, man, that sounds great. You know, I was thinking maybe you and I should go to the Yukon. It'll be great. It'll just be like, you know, Robert Service and Sam McGee. I'll be Robert Service, and you can be Sam McGee. I said, great. That sounds great. And then I read The Cremation of Sam McGee. But I went and I traveled with Chuck to the Yukon, and it took us 5 days to get there, and it was a great trip, and that's another story. Thank you. Good night.